Tony, I'm an addict. Well, this is a very, very special night for me. You know, when I was asked to do this meeting back in June, it seemed like so long ago that, you know, I was going to be, you know, have the time to prepare for this. I remember being in my home group. I walked in a little bit late, and James came up to me, and he looked at me, and he turned around and gave me a bump, and he says, "Can I talk to you after the meeting?" I said, "Absolutely," you know. And so after the meeting, he came up to me, and he said, "Hey, man, your name's been getting thrown around, and, I don't know how you feel about it, but, you know, we want you to do the opening meeting for the Free State Convention coming up in February." And I don't know, I share a lot. This isn't my favorite thing to do, right? But at that moment, right, at that moment in time, right, I was so humbled by the opportunity to come, share my experience, strength, and hopes. Awakening of the Spirit is such a great topic, and I'm just so blessed to be here. You know, Friday night, you know, is a night where I used to divvy up my money. And, like, you know, I'm not sure if you guys did or not, but Friday night I got paid, and I, you know, immediately start doing my math calculations. Gas and electric here. Got my cable bill here. Mortgage bill, I'm gonna put that underneath my sock. But I had 20, because you know what 20 was gonna get me? One. Just one.
That's all.
You know how that story goes, right? So I think we're all on the same page here. Awakening of the Spirit. I can't talk about the awakening of the Spirit until I tell you about my sleeping spirit before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. Before I got here, my spirit was very, very dimmed out, right? Almost to the point of extinction, it talks about in the literature. The things I did to get one more, embarrassing to me, embarrassing to my family, couldn't look people in the eye, couldn't be... I was just a slime ball, right? The disease of addiction made me do things that I didn't want to do. Just kept me places way longer than I wanted to stay. I'm grateful for all my friends here, all the support I got throughout these months leading up to this day. My man Willie B got me a little horseshoe and said, "Good luck, man." How special is that, right? So when my spirit was asleep, right, I was self-centered. I was living in self-centeredness. I only cared about my wants, my desires, my needs. Didn't look outside of any peripheral vision. It was just all about getting and chasing one more. And whatever I had to do to get there is what happened. While my spirit was sleeping, I was always carrying around negative thoughts about life, about people, about myself. Didn't want to look myself in the mirror. Didn't want to own up to what the disease of addiction has done to me. I took pride in being a tough guy in the neighborhood. I took pride in not having an older brother to take up for me. I took pride with doing what I had to do to survive, right? You know, I grew up with a lot of older guys, man, and they beat the crap out of me, right? But they didn't do half as bad as I did to myself, right? Active addiction really took its toll on me. You know, you wouldn't see it today, right? I got a little chipmunk cheeks going on. A little heavier than I like to be, right? I got a color to me, right? I can't say I had a color when my spirit was sleeping. I can't say that. I was gray. I had the Grim Reaper behind me with the sickle.
That's right.
I smoked a lot of coke at the end of my road, right? I used to love smoking coke. And I loved everything about the whole nine yards. The beaker glasses, the test tubes, the baking soda, the chemistry involved in and being Uncle Ben, they call me, right? And when you smoke coke, you smoke a lot of coke, you don't eat too much. The appetite wasn't there for me when I was doing a lot of cocaine. My sleep wasn't there. I didn't lay my head on a pillow too often. I had a girlfriend. We were together for a long time. If I laid in our bed for 8 hours a week, it was a lot. I was always downstairs, always creeping around, pouring on every TV in the house, cigarettes burning, everything in sight, because I would leave them and go geek somewhere, peeking out the window. Just, my spirit was dead. My father died when I was 20. Long time I haven't had my father in my life, right? I never shed a tear at my father's funeral. At the two-day wake, didn't shed one tear. I was so high on PCP, numb as numb could be, right? My spirit was still asleep. Mother is same. I actually got clean. I got clean in 2004 for the first time, right? Erased myself off the streets of East Baltimore. Went down to some place in Crownsville where this grass was real high and swaying. It was a black sky with real bright stars. I never saw stars like that in the city. And I remember getting out. And my mother passed away. Well, while I was in treatment, I wrote my mother a letter, right? I had a glimpse of my spirit starting to awake because I knew I was somewhere where I was doing something good for myself. I knew I was somewhere where I was getting some help. I bought a house I live in Hollandtown my whole life, but it's called Brewer's Hill now because they got the brewery, they got a little, the real estate went up a little bit, but it's always been Hollandtown to Canton to me. I was living in Canton before it was way, way before it was bougie. Way before. Back when all of us, we used to line bats in the gutter, waiting for some guys in a Jeep to come down from Towson to go to Fells and start yelling out the Jeep. Something stupid. And it would be a lot of chaos going on, right? That's when my spirit was sleeping. So I didn't do like monumental things when my spirit was sleeping, just to speed up the story. Like I didn't live right, and it was obvious. Back to the smoking the coke. My jaw was so sunk in. I love sharing this because this is everybody can relate to it. Like it was on it. First of all, it was sunken in. Like if you took a plump grape, put it on the back of the windshield, left it there for 3 summers, pulled it out, it looked like one of them craisins that you get from one of them little boxes of raisins, right? That's what my jaw looked like. My head, my whole head looked like that, but you know how it formed down to my jaw. When my spirit was sleeping, my jaw swung by itself, right? The pendulum. Trying to hold it together, can't do it. It's impossible. I was clean for 6 months. My jaw was still swinging. People thought they were whispering and stuff in the meetings, thinking I'm still doing something. It was just, you know, whatever. I was stealing my mother's peace when my spirit was sleeping. I thought I wasn't harming nobody. I lived a few blocks away from my mother. She got diagnosed with cancer. The drugs and alcohol had me so sleepy. I didn't even want to go see her. These are the things I remember before my spirit awoken, right? But I'm gonna move on because I don't want to talk about like the ugliness of this disease of addiction. I want to talk about like the hope, right? What's promised to you? If you come into a program like this, a life-saving program, give yourself a break. The results, you know, the sky's the limit. For the longest time, I searched for peace of mind, for a spiritual awakening in all types of hallucinogenic potions. Right? I thought if I ate just enough handfuls of mushrooms that I would, like, see nirvana, right? I just did enough LSD, I would be in some state of mind. I would awaken my spirit. All that was just lies, right? I called it peace of mind. Peace of mind. Ah, so elusive. Peace of mind. I didn't realize the very thing I was searching out with drugs was so abundantly free once I put it down and just stopped fighting, right? So one thing has to happen, what had to happen for me to open my spirit up, right? I had to get rid of some distractions in my life, right? And some of the distractions were, you know, some of the things, the people, places, and things I was still trying to put myself in. I was still trying to put myself into a picture that wasn't healthy for me. It didn't fit my spiritual journey that I was trying to embark on. You know, I was still trying to hang in the clubs and the bars. I was still trying to hang with the guys, you know what I mean? I was trying to go around them and show them how clean I was and how I got my weight back, how I got my color back. I stopped watching the news, man. My spirit was getting dimmed out just watching the news, right? For me, I would watch like 30 seconds of something positive, and it'd be like a whole half hour just tragic stuff that would just like, when I was done, I was like, what am I doing? And I got choices today, right? Once I put the drugs down, I got choices. And one of the choices I decided to do is stop watching the news, right? It doesn't serve my spirit any good watching the news. I feel it. When I watched the news, I felt my spirit like, I don't want to say closing up, but I was just feeling ill inside. Another thing I did was I got off social media, man. I was just too distracted by social media. I was too worried about what everybody else was doing. I was too concerned with this. I'm too concerned with that. I wasn't paying attention like to what I wanted to do for real. I got clean to start something. I got clean to be happy, joyous, and free. I didn't get clean to be worrying about the Joneses, right? I didn't get clean to be trying to look like I'm dressing up the outside of a trash can and I'm better than someone. So I removed myself from social media, and it was liberating to my spirit. What I did when I did all this is I started an inward journey. You know, the inward journey, like the abundance of the abundance of my awakenings came from the inward work that I've done. And I've done a lot of work in that area. So what is a spiritual awakening? I looked something up. You know, I read today. I never used to read. You know, I started reading books and stuff. And there's an author called Eckhart Tolle. And he wrote, you know, when there's a spiritual awakening, you awaken into the fullness, the aliveness, and also the sacredness of the now. Like, the now is all I have. I can't be worrying about when I robbed somebody 20 years ago, right? I need to stay in today. And that's what they tell me in the program in Narcotics Anonymous, to stay in today. Don't look back at yesterday. And don't look into what they say. Don't put one foot in yesterday, one foot in tomorrow. And what are you doing? Urinating on today, right? I need to pay attention to today, because today is all I got. I need to focus on today. And that's what they say, one day at a time. When I first got clean, when my spirit was just starting to get ignited again, right? I'm thinking about staying clean. Somebody's up there celebrating 1 year. I'm like, what? 1 year? This is when you're holding on for dear life a minute at a time when you first get clean. I want to say something before I go any further about this spiritual awakening that I've witnessed. There's been some of them. There's been a few, quite a few. You know, I got clean in 2006 for the last time. So I'm a little 18 years, 4 months, and 3 days clean. And I don't say that just to document and just to amaze myself that how time, the illusion of time, Time doesn't stop for nothing. Time will keep ticking. So what I'd like to say to anyone in the crowd that may not have had a spiritual awakening yet, that there's no set time. There's no set moment to reach a spiritual awakening. You don't stay clean for 281 days, get through 3 questions of your 4 step, and I just had a spiritual awakening. It just don't happen like that. We're calling back. To one of my first spiritual awakenings when I got to the program in Narcotics Anonymous is every day I told you I was obsessed and about using and going back out because that's all I knew. I used from 13 to 33. It's 2 decades. It's a lot of behavioral, like, brainwashing, right, that I did for myself. Doing the wrong thing. And I remember every day obsessing about using, and then one day, just one day, I had this notion that I didn't think about getting high today. I didn't think about getting high that day. What a huge, huge part of the beginning of my recovery, that day, that moment in time that I realized that I didn't think about using all day long. Man, what a beginning of a journey that led me to today, right? Happy, joyous, and free was what I was promised. And that day, I felt a glimpse of hope that just maybe this program's going to work for me. I had the opportunity to come in here, and guys that I got high with were already here. 2 people I used with. Every day, pretty much, for a long time. Staying up all night using. Staying up past the bars when they close. Staying up past when the birds start singing in the morning. Staying up after the birds stop chirping in the morning. Staying up when all the squares were going to work. Staying up smoking, still looking at each other, saying, when are we going to get clean? And it was always tomorrow. And they were already here. I didn't know where they went, but they were here when I got here. And they weren't telling me what I needed to do. They weren't telling me what to do to stay. They were living a different way of life. They were living different, and it was attractive to me. So I found hope in that. And I said, if they can do it, so can I. When my spirit's awake, I feel a strong sense of purpose. I'm living in the symphony of life, right? I'm living in the moment and realizing that things aren't happening to me. They're happening for me. That's huge for an addict like me, right? Because I was a victim at one time. I was always a victim. When I need to go through something, the God of my understanding, I have a conscious contact with the God of my understanding. I talk to my God in the morning, throughout the day, and at night. I ask God to come to my heart in the morning. I ask God to be with me through challenging times throughout the day. And I also thank God for the day when I lay my head down at night. Just something I do. I've been doing it for a long time. And I realize that everything that God puts in front of me isn't to damn me, isn't it to make me go into the victim mode again. It's an opportunity God is placing in front of me to challenge me, to grow me, and to allow me to grow through the pain in certain areas of my life. When I have a spiritual awakening, I have like this inner feeling that like my life is heading in the right trajectory, right? That I'm in the right place at the right time. the feeling that I'm completely connected to everything, right? So when I started this journey of this inner journey, you know, I started to do all kinds of things. I started going to meditation. I started going to meditation classes. I started meditating. Well, first of all, I started meditating by myself when I was in treatment. I started to quiet my mind. I started to give myself some moments of peace, right? Because I don't know about you, but every day I have a succession hamster wheel of thoughts that does non-stop. It's the wheel of my insanity in my brain that doesn't stop. It keeps going round and round and round and round. But when I take time for myself, when I take a little moment and pause and step outside of that hamster wheel and just sit in stillness, some magical things happen for me, right? I get intuition. I get perspective. I get things I wouldn't do if I'm consumed in the tunnel vision of whatever problem I'm going through at this moment in time. I can't see it. I'm knee deep in it. I can't see through the tunnel vision. I need a wider perspective. So when I sit still and I quiet my mind, I'm able to just get a little bit wider perspective. And sometimes that's all I need to get me through another day clean. So I started going to meditation. I started doing meditation and I realized that, like, this was cool, man. This was like a journey that I can do. And I started learning about like chi and energy that's in everyone's body. It's just tapping into the energy that's already there, right? Breathing techniques. You know, I learned how to release DMT in my brain. And I thought I had to smoke DMT to do such a thing, right? And I realized that I can release DMT in my brain just by doing these breathing exercises. It's crazy. I mean, once I started on this journey, I was obsessed, right? I started learning about the colors and how the colors of the spectrum of the rainbow equal a certain part of the chakra in your body and how there's a musical note attached to that. We all watch The Sound of Music, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Like, each one of those notes equal a color, coordinate with the body part. It's just neat stuff. And I just started to, like, learn. I remember going with someone in this room. We started going to Native American sweat lodges, right? Lakota sweat lodges. Like sitting in a sweat lodge with a bunch of people, like with a hot fire in the middle. And you're like, I started to learn about the collectiveness of humanity, right? Like how we're connected to the birds and to the trees and to the crawly ones and the standing ones were the trees, like, you know, the trees are old, man. The trees have been around for a long time. But when my spirit's sleeping, I don't think about none of that. But I tell you what, it does happen when I walk through the woods and I feel something. And if you ever walk through the woods and you're connected to the woods, that's the feeling I'm talking about. That's your spirit awakening. So you might sit here and say, I didn't have a spiritual awakening. I don't know nothing about that. But once I go through some of these things that I went through, you might say, man, I did have a spiritual awakening before. I'm part of that club. I started to do transcendental meditation. You know, I did some stuff, you know. And one thing I realized is when I meditated by myself, it was very nice, right? I was able to open my corridors of my spirit, right? I was awakening my spirit. But something happened when I went to a meditation class with other people that were trying to do the same thing. And what I realized that spirit is energy, right? It's frequency. It's vibration, right? Energy, frequency, and vibration. So it's just like coming here to the program in Narcotics Anonymous. We could sit home and do our step work by ourselves. We could sit home and have a revelation about something we did that helped us in another area of our lives and come to some conclusion that our spirits are going in the right direction. But when you come to a room and there's a collective energy of people trying to stay clean, just trying to be a better version of themselves on a daily basis, it's a beautiful thing, right? So when I went to these meditation groups with other people, the energy in the room It's just like the energy I feel here. So I know the presence of my spirit is awakened, right? And I know the presence of my higher power is with me. And I'm in the right place, right? Couple situations I want to talk about when my spirit awakened, right? Like for the longest time, you know, I worked down at Waterfront, right? So I work with thousands of people. Thousands. And I don't know about you, but I got a couple personalities, and I know some of you out there got a couple personalities too, right? So when you take a couple thousand people and you take 2 and 3 personalities, you talk about 4 or 6,000 personalities you deal with on a daily basis. It can be a little challenging, to say the least. Very few people down at Waterfront are walking on a spiritual line, I'll tell you that too. So, I mean, very challenging. So there's some people throughout my career down there that rubbed me the wrong way, and you got to work with these people on a daily basis. And it could be any job. It doesn't have to be. It's irrelevant. It's just people, right? It's when people don't see eye to eye, right? And what I used to do, right, I would see these people that... I want to tell you what I would do to them, right? I'm trying to live different today. But every time I see these people, my spirit would get heavy, very heavy. So I know they had power over me because my spirit was heavy. And I would carry that heaviness around in my spirit. And every day I saw him, it would be the same thing like Groundhog Day. Every day I would be weighed down. By these people, right? And the funny thing is, they didn't even know. They don't even know that they got you so worked up. The craziest thing happened. Trust me, try it and see if it works, right? But this awoke in my spirit. Somebody told me, hey, do yourself a favor. Pray for that person. And what did I say? I wouldn't bet on that. And so I carried that weight, right? Until the pain got great enough, right? And then what did I do? I tried something different. And I got down on one of those. Probably took a few times. It wasn't like an instantaneous. I'm done. I lifted off. Whoever was is gone, right? It wasn't that at all. I literally put the work in. You got to put the work in around here. You just can't get this by just like coming in a meeting and like, if you want to go and get a spiritual awakening, you got to put some work in. I had to put some work in, right? So one of the things I had to do is take a simple suggestion. And I got on my knees that morning or that night, and I prayed for that person. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was just blindly taking a suggestion because mentally, I'm a pretty cognitive guy. I think I'm pretty smart, but I could not wrap my head around that. But I did it. And the next night I did it. The next morning I did it. And like the feeling of the obsession to use back when I first got clean, one day I went to work and I saw the same dude that didn't know nothing, didn't change nothing, same person, same rat person, little grimy rat. But what happened was my perspective has changed, right? My perspective was changed from those prayers, and I was able to see and give grace. Because if I want grace in this world, I got to give grace. I can't just like walk around and do what the hell I want, and then as soon as someone else does what they want, I gotta point fingers and call them out. If I want grace, I gotta be able to bestow grace. So I prayed, and then it was magically, and it was like, did that just happen? Is that real? I go to work the next day, the same thing. I see the dude, and my spirit didn't get heavy. I'm like, because I came, once I had the perspective, once I had the awareness that that was going on, I had control over me, right? I had control over my feelings and my emotions at that point. I no longer, I took the power back from that person and gave it to myself. And I extended love. And love is the most important spiritual principle, I believe, that goes on in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, right? The giving and receiving of love. You can receive all the love you want. I could receive all the love I wanted from my friends that were just pumping me up today, right? But if I'm not giving the love back, I'm faking the funk. 5 minutes. Anyway, so anyway, when I did that and my spirit lifted up, like I said, I was like, I gotta try that again. Because it wasn't just one person I had a little ill feelings for. It was a whole, it could have been a few others. So I like tried the simulation again. I was like, and it worked. Powerful, powerful. Pray for the people that you resent the most, and you will get the most freedom from that exercise, for real. All right, let me speed this up. Going to the ocean, I said. Going to the ocean, walking through the woods, climbing a huge rock wall fort overlooking the North Shore in Hawaii a couple years ago. Skydiving up in Harford County at 10,000 foot. Jumping out of a plane in Hawaii, 14,000 foot. Just awakens my spirit, right? Swimming with the sharks. Miraculously, another thing, a miraculous thing goes when I'm going through something, and I'm going through something really, really painful, whatever it is, and I'm so consumed with this problem, I'm so consumed with this thing. Magical thing happens when I reach out and help somebody else. And take the edge off of that immediately, right? That's awakening of my spirit. Increase empathy and compassion. Just a real quick story. I was leaving work. There's a guy that's at the gate every day. I see him, Navon. I first met him a couple months ago. Every day he's like, hey, Tony, have a great day, buddy. Just be safe getting home. Last couple days he didn't say that. He looked at me, nodded, and went like, yeah, had like a grill on his face like I stole his wallet or something. I'm like, what's up with this guy? You know what I mean? I'm thinking, I'm rolling in my head, like, what could I have possibly done to him? Then I'm thinking to myself, I didn't do nothing to him. That's just him, right? So what I did was yesterday, I rode by, I said, Devon, I said, how you doing, man? I said, you ain't the same bubbly self you usually are. He's like, man, I'm just going through it, man. I'm just going through it. I'm trying to hang on, I'm trying to do this, I'm trying to do that without grabbing that bottle. And I was like, what'd you say? He said, without grabbing that bottle. I said, wow. I said, hey, man, I just felt compelled. I said, hey. And I felt like you before, man. I said, I felt like you. I said, I got 18 years sobriety. I said, if you want to call, if you have anything you want to talk about, I'm here for you. And most people, if their spirit wasn't awake, they would have just drove by like that asshole. And you know, he didn't say have a nice day or be safe getting home like you usually do. Screw that guy. I said something was wrong. My spirit was awakened and I had awareness that something wasn't right with this strange guy that I just know his name. He works at the gate at my job. But I reached out, extended love to the guy. I just extended an ear. And he thanked me, he took my number, he gave me his number, and he was so thankful for that just little act of kindness. It's great. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up. There's no greater joy, there's no greater spiritual awakening for me than to witness the growth. Someone coming into this room. I have four sponsees in this room. I watch these guys grow. I watched these guys come in here broken. And I've witnessed the change, the transformation. Just like someone witnessed the transformation within me, I'm able to see it in others. That's the beauty of Narcotics Anonymous. That's the part that awakens my spirit the most. I cannot stress that enough. There's no greater joy than to watch and witness Someone come in here busted up, broken, don't want to look anybody in the eye. And then to stand up straight, look you in the eye. So there's a just for today that's going to talk about that. I love this just for today. What this just for today does for me, it takes his, in my mind, a tough guy, and he breaks me down pretty rapidly, right? Because this is the whole program summed up for me, right? It's the just for today. It's the added gift, January 25th. The added gift, an added gift. We see it happening among us every day. This miraculous turnabout is evidence of a spiritual awakening. We watch them walk into their first meeting defeated. Their spirits broken. Their suffering is obvious, and their desire to help for help even more apparent. They collect a welcome chip and go back to their seats shaken by the effort. We see them again, and they seem a little more comfortable. They found a sponsor and are attending meetings every night. They still won't meet our glance, but they nod their head in recognition as we share. We notice a spark of hope in their eyes, and they smile uncertainly when we encourage them to keep coming back. A few months later, they are standing straight. They've learned how to make eye contact. They're working the steps with their sponsor, and they are healing as a result. We listen to them sharing at meetings. We stack chairs with them afterwards. A few years later, they are speaking at a convention workshop. They've got a wonderful, humorous personality. They smile when they see us. They hug us. They tell us they could never have done it without us. And they understand when we say, nor could we without you. Just for today, I will find joy in witnessing the recovery of another. I hope I helped someone out tonight. Super grateful to be here. Friday night. Let's have a wonderful convention. God bless you all. Thanks for letting me share.
Myra, to come up and introduce our second speaker.
Hi, I'm Myra Mahady. And I'd like to take the time to introduce this young lady that I met. When I met her, she was humble, open-minded, and willingness to learn this program. She's just as eager today to learn this program, open-minded and willing. But she has added some other things. She's very into this program. She sponsors women. She can be sponsored. She takes a couple of commitments. And I think she never say no. So, you know, I'm hoping that you receive this awesome message from Mel, my sponsor.
It's finally happening. It's here, right? Thank you, Tony. Thank you so much. You know, sometimes that was a great lead. I needed that. You know, sometimes I got to get a meeting in before I could do one. Can you hear me now? Yeah, probably. I'm a little shorter than him. So, I got asked to do this meeting, right? And I thank the programming committee. I thank another addict for seeing something in me to invite me here, right? But I got asked to do this in December. And February seems so far away that I didn't really go into the rabbit hole of what all this entailed, right? It's like, okay, I got asked to do a convention. I called my sponsor. It's exciting, right? But you know what was so great about that? About somebody asking me in December to do a meeting in February? It means they knew They had a belief that I could stay clean one day at a time. So no matter what happened between December and February, all I really had to stay committed to doing was to not use, right? Because if I use, I lose this opportunity, right? This is a grand opportunity, right? I know I hear people say all the time, this is the most uncomfortable thing for me. I don't like this. I don't know what's wrong for me. I love this shit. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's y'all. I don't know what it is, right? But listen, I'm the addict that was really reserved, believe it or not. I'm that, right? I'm the addict that, like, really didn't want to be around too many people, right? I didn't really want you to get to know me. First thing I was ever addicted to was sucking my thumb and digging my navel, right? I sucked my thumb so hard and so long. They put tape on it. They put gloves on it. They put hot sauce on my thumb. They told me, Mel, your teeth are going to buck. You got to stop doing that. It's not ladylike because I had to get to my navel. It don't matter if I have a dress on or anything. I'm lifting it up and I'm getting in that, right? And over time, my teeth did buck. And I developed a lisp, right? And I've been very, very self-conscious of the way I speak. I used to cover my mouth like this so you wouldn't hear the way I pronounce my S's because, like, people would tease me about that. And today, you could have never told me that I would enjoy talking to people because I've been so self-conscious on the way I sound and how y'all was going to talk about me when I was done and y'all was going to say she got a lisp and she talked funny and blah, blah, blah. And then I came to this place, Narcotics Anonymous, and y'all received me with love. Y'all said y'all was going to love me until I learned how to love myself, and it sounded very, very fake. Who said that to somebody they don't know? You don't know me, but you're going to love me until I can love myself. How you know I don't love myself? Right? This is like the way my mind works, right? I'm like, y'all don't even know me like that, but the truth is I didn't. Right? I'm going to identify. I'm going to identify with a home group. I'm a member of the Parkville Home Group of Narcotics Anonymous. We meet Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. on Harper Road. I'm the alternate JSR and I'm the treasurer, right? That's my service commitment. I have a sponsor. Her name is Myra. I work steps. I take commitments. And I do what y'all tell me to do one day at a time so that I don't have to go back to using. Y'all told me when I got here that the only thing y'all could promise me was freedom from active addiction. And that your message of hope was that an addict, any addict, could stop using drugs, lose the desire to use drugs, and find a new way to live. I didn't know if I wanted any of that. I just knew at the time I got here that the using had to stop. Right? I'm an addict who, like, any way I could get it, I gotta get it. Stop using was so foreign to me, but I wanted to, right? I remember the dead spirit you was talking about, Tony. Well, like, I wanted to stop using. I really, really did. I needed to stop using. The unmanageability of my life was evident inward and outward. People who loved me were saying, Mel, you got a problem. You need to do something about your problem. I kept denying it. I kept saying, no. Listen, I know I smoke a bit of crack here and there. I did the same thing, Tony. I used to take my money, right? Because the now was very big in my story. I used to take the money, too, and be like, this one goes to this bill, and that one goes. I used envelopes, though. I knew not to keep it on my person. I used envelopes. My pockets have never been trustworthy. And somehow, one way or another, the envelope that I wasn't supposed to go to, the one that was for the rent, the one that was going to keep the house over the kids' head, that envelope got open too, but listen, I told myself, I'm going to put it back. I'm going to pay myself back. I know that the people going to want this money on the first of the month. And it's the 30th. That gives me enough time to get it back in there by the first of the month. I'm going to do it. And I believe that. I believed it wholeheartedly. That I was going to do that until the day came that I didn't do that. And them people embarrassed me by putting that damn eviction notice for everybody to see that I didn't pay the rent. And because, listen, I got a family that they enable. They're very loving. I can ask them for anything. The rent was $1,040. I went to get that money for my father. My father couldn't understand how my husband and I collectively with two jobs didn't have the rent. And so I said, Daddy, listen, you know how hard it is for me to come and ask you for this money? Like, your grandchildren are going to be outside. I don't want to do this, okay? Like, are you going to give me the money or no? Because I manipulate when that thing is on me. I don't care who I'm harming when that thing is on me. When the spirit's not awakened, listen, I take everything. So Daddy gave me the money, right? And I take the money back to hubby, and I'm like, it's on. And me and hubby have a group conscience, because listen, we don't know nothing about Narcotics Anonymous, and we asked, and we decided in our business meeting that the smartest and best thing to do with this money would to be used. But not all of it, just a little bit. Just enough that we could afford to pay back, because, you know, there's some days until the eviction. It's not like it's tomorrow. It's not like it's right here, right now. And we did that. And something happened between the first one. Y'all told me later on that one was too many and 1,000 wasn't enough, right? And that when we put one in us, that thing activates. So we activated that disease, and next thing I knew, $1,040 was gone. And the pain and the anxiety and the suffering and the panic and the fear, all those things were here. It was real. It's happening. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? I can't believe I did this. Oh, we got to get the money back. What am I? Okay, I'm going to ask Mommy. Mind you, Mommy's married today. But somehow, I don't think Mommy and Daddy talk about finances. Like, who does that? What couple does that? And I asked my mother for the money, and she said, didn't your father give you the money? No. Did he tell you that? That didn't happen. And I lie, and I rationalize, and I do the same thing, and I get the money from Mommy. And I go back with my husband. We have another business meeting, and our diseases are active, and we said we know what we did wrong. Right? So we're not going to do that again. Right? We smoke too much crack. We need to buy more dope. Okay? That's what we did. We didn't do it right. And you know what happened? One is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And we used the money a second time. Right? I'm talking about the insanity of the disease of addiction. And so the money's gone a second time. And so a third time comes up and I'm back in panic and fear and anxiety. And I don't know what to do. And oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And oh, if I could just stop using, I can't believe I smoked that much crack. Like, what in the world is happening? And then I remembered that the social services had this place. And if I can go and prove hardship, they'll cut me a check for the rent. Somebody told me that, you know, the sponsors we get out there. And I went there. And them people, listen, you got to prove hardship. You gotta prove it. They don't just take your word for it. So I took the time and the resources to prove hardship to them. But somehow I missed that I was in the hardship. And they wrote me a check. And I went back to the husband. And we had a group conscience again. And we decided we need to deal drugs instead of using drugs. And if we did, because that makes more sense, because now we see the problem. We're going to keep using drugs. We just need drugs to sell so that it could maintain our own habit. And listen, I don't have Narcotics Anonymous, so no one's told me monkeys don't sell bananas yet. Don't know that. I gotta learn the hard way. Somehow, we done smoked this money up again. Can't believe it. I'm back in fear and panic and anxiety, and I don't believe that this has happened again a third time. Oh my goodness, woe is me. What do I do now? But look, I had this job, this great, great job. And the light bulb went off. That I've had this job for 10 years and I have a 401k plan. Right? That's genius. Right? Duh. Pull out another hardship loan. Take the penalty on it. Because this is an emergency and there's no way you're going to leave your kids homeless. So I pulled the money out. But now I know to take out more than the rent. Because, duh, you smoke that amount. So I took out enough. And somehow the using went on so long that the eviction actually happened. And I was in my mother's basement in my 30s, married with children, not understanding how did I get here? How did I not be able to stop using? How could I not stay clean long enough to keep the home over my children's head? And the shame and the guilt of the reality hit me so hard that the only thing I had to cope with was to use more.
The very thing that is causing this pain, is causing this panic, and is causing this fear, I have identified that drugs are my problem, but they are also my only solution. You know how hard it is to fight the only solution you have, which is also your biggest problem? When there's no home group to share this on, when there's no sponsor to take you to a step, when you don't have a service commitment to get you outside of that, when the spirit is dead and you don't know or you don't understand why, all you know is this thing says to go, and when it says go, you go. You gone. Nobody can stop you, and everything that lies in your way and in your way is up. I never want to feel that way again. I make some mistakes, but I don't want to do that again. Because, see, that should have been a rock bottom, and I would love to tell you that the using stopped there, but it did not. I kept using. Because after it's already gone, can't get no worse than this. I'm already messed up. Cat's out of the bag now. Everybody knows. Now I ain't gotta hide it. Now I don't gotta put the mask on. You know what's up. So I got sent somewhere. And then that was a terrible place for me. But I got clean there. And then they carried this message to me that an addict, any addict, could stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And see, I didn't know about losing the desire, and I didn't know about a new way to live, but the stop using part. How you do that? Don't tell me if you don't pick it up, it can't get in you. I know that. I'm trying to figure out how you don't pick it up. Right? Did you smoke the way I smoke? Like, was your dealers giving you the stuff they was giving me? Like, were you really hooked? Were you really an addict? Because how do we stop? How do we stop and smile? How do we stop and enjoy life? Right? Why are we here? It's my most relatable piece of literature. Before coming here, I could not manage my own life. I could not live and enjoy life the way other people do. I had to have something different, and I thought I had found it in drugs. So when the drugs go, and I still need something different, what is it? And y'all said, Mel, get a sponsor and a home group and a service commitment. Pray, go to meetings, and don't pick up. Keep coming back. I said, okay. Listen, I was very willing, but it just didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand how that works until I got a sponsor and a home group and a service commitment. And in my service commitment, I had to sign slips, and people were coming in on slips. So Wednesday, you know, Mel with slips, and then everybody say Mel, and I like that. And I was like, oh, everybody say my name. Just bring them over here. I'm stamping and signing. I'm like, I like this. I'm stamping and signing. Listen, the husband is still using. I didn't go to a recovery house. I'm still in my parents' basement, but I'm stamping and I'm signing these damn papers. Because y'all said at the Parkville group, you needed me Wednesday nights at 7 p.m., no matter what was going on, for me to stamp and sign these papers. So the past 60 days of my life, where things have been absolutely disarray, I have stuck to the basis of this program. Because the one thing that y'all promised me is the one thing that y'all have given me. And that is freedom from active addiction. Right? That is staying clean one day at a time. So when I'm asking December to do something in February that requires I stay committed to staying in this process, I got to do it, right? Because, like, there are people. There's a programming committee. I've been in service long enough to know how this thing works. I've been a speaker seeker. You know, it's hard to find speakers. It's hard to get somebody. The fellowship. I was nervous. I was. And then y'all poured into me the way Tony was talking about. Mel, I'm excited to see you. You excited, girl? You this, you that. You poured into me. Mel, you pray yet? You want to pray? Do you know how loving it is to ask someone if they want to seek a higher power out with you in order to calm your nerves so that you could carry a message, Mel? That love that Tony was talking about. That awakening of the spirit, right? I'm going to tell you that 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That right there, that's our, like, asterisk with our guarantee, right? It don't say, we didn't word it, we may have had a spiritual awakening by this time. It doesn't say, you know, by the time you get here, it's possible your spirit may have been awakened. That 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. What do you do, Mel? You can't even keep it. You can't keep it for yourself, Mel. This ain't like the good dope boys that you don't want to tell nobody. Like, I can't tell you what corner this is on because you're going to buy all the stuff up and it ain't going to be nothing for me. This is that I got to give it to you so that I can get more of it and keep it.
Right.
This is that in order for it to work for me, I got to share it with you. Right? I was thinking about this topic too, awakening of the spirit, and it's such a fitting thing, right? Because we walk around here and some of us don't even know our spirits are dead. We walk around here, some of us don't even, we're not in contact with what our spiritual conditioning is. I was not in contact with no spiritual conditioning when I got here. I wasn't trying to be in contact with no spiritual conditioning when I got here. I wasn't trying to first step, second step, I wasn't trying to do none of that. I was just trying not to smoke crack and to get my house back. Can y'all help me do that? Y'all was like, well, look, I got a meeting I got to go to. How about you come with me? This is the trickery that goes on in Narcotics Anonymous, right? How about you come with me and we could talk about, grab some coffee, the fellowship, right? I'm going to get you involved, Mel. I'm going to get you outside of that stuff that's going on. And we could talk about how to get that done, right? And I got it back. You know, I got an actual house, not even an apartment. Because y'all told me I could do it. Y'all said y'all was going to show me how to do it. He said, Mel, keep coming back. He said, more will be revealed. And let me tell you, more will be revealed is chapter 10 of our basic text, and it's my favorite chapter. And I asked James to borrow a basic text because I thought about it because it's my favorite chapter. And it says, a spiritual awakening is an ongoing process. We experience a wider view of reality as we grow spiritually. An opening of our minds to new spiritual and physical experience is the key to better awareness. As we grow spiritually, we become attuned to our feelings and our purpose in life. By loving ourselves, we become able to truly love others. This is a spiritual awakening that comes as a result of living this program. We find ourselves daring to care and love. So how do you live this program, Mel? How do you live this thing? Like, not just say it, not just sound good. Like, how do you do this thing when you got children talking to you crazy and your old ways of behavior used to be to yoke them up, to call them out of their name, to exert your authority over them so that they're operating out of fear because you need that control over them? How do you do that? How do you exercise the first step in every area of your life when you feel that surrender of powerlessness leaves you feeling weak instead of spiritually refreshed? How do you do that? Right? Where do you go to for that? How do you activate step one in every area of your life? And it's just as simple as me saying, you know what, I can't. I can't do this. It's as simple as me calling my sponsor and saying, hey, so, you know, my son told me no today, and I'm not sure if he can do that. Like, I don't think he can tell me no, but he did, and I think we should fight now, you know? Because listen, my son is 14, he's 5'11", and I just don't, my mind say he need me to suplex him so that he know who I really am. Like, he needs me. Like, he needs to know who I am. Like, he needs to really know he can't try me. But the program, the being attuned, the knowing when something's going wrong with somebody whose behavior is not like that, like you were talking about, Tony, right? Well, the program comes out of my mouth. Son, are you okay? Whoa. Son, is everything, you don't usually talk to me like that. Are you having a problem? Would you like to talk about what's going on? And becoming the mother that he would actually confide in and not cower from and not slam the door on. That's taken a lot of work. That's taken a lot of activating the program of recovery, right? I am, listen, if you know me, I take these steps very, very seriously. I take them very seriously because I told you where I come from. I am the addict that will use and use and use at the expense of others, at the expense of the people that I love most. When that disease is activated, all bets are off. And for the first time in my entire history, a simple way has proven itself in my life. And it's been through Narcotics Anonymous. And all I know is that if I just stay in the basics of what y'all say to stay in, I stay in touch with the home group. I let them know, hey, I won't be there today. Hey, I'm over here. Hey, so-and-so was speaking. I stay committed. See, my life is very, very busy now. I wish I had time to tell you how much I've gotten. I wanted to hold on to the job at the end of my road. I wanted to keep my job so bad that I went to rehab to save the job. I didn't think I had an identity outside of this place of work. And so when the new desire, when the awakening of my spirit came in, and something said, hey, Mel, how about you do your own? Fear was like, oh, girl, you can't think like that. Fear said, oh, you never did that before. Mm-mm. Fear said, no, Mel, you can't. But the program said to share it. The program said to tell on your disease. Because the disease said, Mel, you stupid for even thinking you can do that. And I shared it. And you know what y'all said? Mel, you can do that. Y'all said, Mel, so-and-so did that. Let me put you on with so-and-so. Ask them how they did it. So, and I took a little step out of fear. The willingness that we talk about, that indispensable spiritual principle of willingness. I said, okay, they're going to think I sound real. They don't even know me. They know you an addict in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Who knew that that would be enough to help another person? And I said, well, you know, I've been in this industry for like 17 years now, but like, I think I should open up my own place, but I'm really scared. I don't, you know, really know how, you know. And I call my sponsor because my sponsor's an entrepreneur. And my sponsor, in all of her infinite wisdom, took me to the third step of Narcotics Anonymous, where we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care. Over to the care of God as we understand him. Care means the provision of what is necessary for one's health and well-being. The provision, it means, Mel, when you turn your will over to the care of something, you trust that your health, your well-being is going to be provided for at the way you understand the God of your understanding. I say, okay, yeah, I could do that, but the thing about bills is that they come like regularly on a scheduled time, and God be working a schedule that like keeps the graveyard shift, and I'm AM. I don't know. We do not be lining up when we be talking. And I kept sharing about it, right? And as I kept sharing about it, the open-mindedness came. And I was talking to people who had done it, and people were saying, they believe in me. We got a saying here, find somebody who believes in you and wants to see you do well. And y'all hyped me up, man. Y'all pumped me up. Y'all did. Right. Y'all did. Y'all had me. I was like, yeah, all right, okay. I'm going to do it. And I did it. And it's been working. And it's okay. And I didn't lose everything. And I didn't mess it up like my disease told me I was going to. And the people came, they didn't leave and abandon me like I thought they were going to. And nobody laughed at me. They said, Mel, we want to see you do well. And how can we help? I'm almost in 9 years of staying clean, and y'all still say, Mel, what is the problem? And how can we help you? And I used to really think that y'all was lying to me. I didn't know that I was a part of a program, Tony, where people pray for you when they don't like you. I didn't know that I would hold and lock in a circle where somebody would say, hold a moment of silence for the person you resent the most. And I look up. And I'm trying to, is that your moment of silence? Are you doing it? Because I want to know, like, are we
are we doing it for real, or are we just gonna, hey,
are we collectively in here holding a moment for the people we don't like? Like, is that what we're doing?
But we participate in the moment of silence, and the 11th step says that that act right there is a part of meditation. It says that act right there. See, that's an 11th step that we participate in as a group. And even if somebody is thinking that no one disrupts the silence in the group to speak it, because we've turned our will over to the care of the presence of a power greater than ourselves to do whatever they had to do in that moment of silence. I truly believe that it was a moment of silence that was held for me. And y'all prayed for me when I was out there to come in here. Y'all asked me to come here before you knew what was going on in my life. Before you knew that I was walking around with a deadened spirit. Y'all held a moment so that I could come in here. So that y'all could teach me how to do this thing, how to live this way. This is the best I've ever lived my life. It's the best I've ever lived my life. And the problems have not gone away. I was literally in court this morning because of my oldest child's baby father. Yes, because I'm a grandmother too. And I was listening to you, Tony, because I got to do that tonight. I got to pray. My sponsor told me too, but sometimes I'm just like, nah, sometimes people just need me. My mind say that. Sometimes people, that don't work with everybody. You can't just be loving on everybody because some people need to learn the hard way. That's what, you know? And I was angry. But guess what? I came in here because a member was like, Mel, you were supposed to be somewhere and I didn't see you there. And I got to dump on her and tell her all that was going on in my life because you guys have become a fellowship. You guys have been my activated second step. You guys are the power that's greater than me, that restores me to sanity when I'm clean and I'm on that hamster wheel. When I'm like, I'm telling my sponsor, I said, look, Ma, I'm telling you, I think I'm becoming a little too spiritual for life. Like, I think, like, how do you pause the program? And when we have all of our affairs, do it count when somebody is, like, after your child? Because, like, doesn't that negate being a mama bear? Like, then the first speaker talks about grace. It was my higher power that made him share about grace. Because if I would have gotten what I had deserved, if I would have gotten what I had deserved, I don't think I would be standing here talking to y'all. So I thank you for that. For carrying that message that helps another addict with what we're going on with today. These principles in all of our affairs, it awakens that spirit. When I stop living for me and I get into the we of this program, right? We! We say that for a reason. We! I never met a bunch of dope fiends that want to be a we so bad. We! We love you. We need you. We want to see you do well. We believe in you. And we're not lying. We're not making this up. I know we're not making this up because I didn't think I liked people. I didn't think I was the people person. The hugs, listen, this is Baltimore. I was like, they are running my pockets. I know what's going on. I know what's happening. They see I'm not really no real addict because I got my hair done and my nails done. Because, you know, I was that acting now. They know I got money. They trying to get it. Ain't nobody trying to hug. Why would you try to hug me and you don't know me? What are we doing that for? And then sometimes it's just a hug that operates as a second step in my life. It's just that, Mel, you didn't want to make it to this meeting. You got so much going on. You didn't really want to be here. But somebody's so glad to see you here. Somebody don't know what happened in your day, but they knew on Wednesday at 7 o'clock you was going to be there, and they came just to see you. That's the we. That's when the spirit awakens. That's when we get out of that self-centeredness. And we start living for each other. That's when we're God-reliant and not self-reliant. Because, yes, I got a lot of stuff going on. But what could be more important? What could be more important than to carry out a commitment that I had to Narcotics Anonymous, the program that has saved my life? The program that told me that an addict
any addict could stop using drugs, lose the desire to use them, and find a new way to live, and then actually do it. I don't know if y'all ever been around people who say things, but they don't mean them. Or they tell you something, but they don't, they're not people of their word. Narcotics Anonymous, you guys have delivered. You guys have delivered. And I hope that this weekend, your spirits are all awakened, and you become, as we say, spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive. I'm an addict named Mel. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, thanks.
I'm still an addict named Sandy.